Welcome back to the Space Case Sarah Show with space nerds Kavi and Benjamin here on iRock Space Radio. We are recording simultaneously live on streaming platforms, and we're recording for you for this episode. So it's really going to be actually interesting to listen back on this and be like, that worked, or that really did not work. We'll see. The thing that I enjoy about being a communicator and doing this kind of stuff is that I have really gotten over the fear of making content. Like, I will just do it. And if it worked, it worked. And if it didn't, great. I learned and I moved on. And so that's kind of what's happening here right now. I mean, even just starting this show, there's this learning curve of how we all interact and what's going to work best. And so this is why I don't listen to old things of myself. So once it's done, I don't listen again.
He's not kidding, gang. He sends Kavi and me a video a day. Hey, check out this thing.
Look at me.
And an astronaut. Hey, check out this thing with galaxy and some cool tunes I like. Hey, check this out. And it doesn't stop. It's really, really cool. I love it.
I do enjoy making TikToks. They're just like anything that grabs my attention. I'm like, I could put a video to that. I'm going to do something with that. I don't know.
But at least it's creative. As opposed to what I do. Yes. I do the same thing with memes. And it's basically just like taking somebody else's content and mashing it together and saying, that's funny, right? Like, laugh at this, please. I need the attention.
Right.
But you're actually being creative.
Right. I just hear a song or I see a trend and I'm like, I'm going to do something with that too. So there's not a lot of logic or like creative flow. It's just I do. So
it's awesome.
Let's talk about, we're kind of talking about atmospheres, but it's turning into a Mars conversation. That's all right. You're right there, Ben.
He's drinking for three.
Nothing.
Okay.
Did you swallow the Lego astronaut?
He's got it.
He's fine.
Keep all the button batteries away from Ben. Can you talk about testing out organic practices to feed future explorers, living bacteria in the soil, and impacts on contamination? That is a little bit trickier of a question to answer. Ethics and philosophy and stuff like that, there's definitely a lot of interesting conversation with organic farming. I'm going to start with that. There's definitely a lot of greenwashing in the organic food market that is very warrantedly criticized. I kind of get a little eye-rolling going through organic sections at even in my stores because every single piece of produce is wrapped in plastic. And I'm like, really? Like,
Individually wrapped grapes.
And so from a chemical perspective, organic pesticides and commercial, mainstream, we'll say, pesticides, your body can't tell the difference. And unfortunately, they have to use so much more for organic because they're not as effective. So there's like a conversation there. And I really actually love how Bill Nye used to be, he had a very strong stance on one way and he started kind of like learning and started changing his opinion in a different direction. And I think that that's so important as communicators and people in science to be open to the conversations that don't align with how you think and believe and listen to the other side of it. So going back to his question about testing organic practices, I can talk to you about growing food in regolith because I have had the opportunity to talk to the guy who manages the lab that does the testing for that, that sends the food, the plants that they grow on the ISS. So they test all of those plants on Earth first. And it's really cool. It's really impressive because they are, putting things in that regolith to basically make food possible to grow in the regolith. I had to ask him, I was like, I'm sorry, this is so cliche, but potatoes on Mars. Can we talk potatoes on Mars? And he was like, here's the facts. Could you grow potatoes on Mars? Yes. Would you die from eating them? Yes. Eventually you would. Yes. So
if all you eat is potatoes.
You would die because there's something in the regolith that biological organisms can't expel. Potatoes can't and we can't. So you would eat those potatoes. I don't remember what it is, but it would build up and it would build up and it would build up. And then you start getting cancer. You would start having a lot of problems because your body can't get rid of it because the potatoes can't get rid of it. So what they're experimenting in is putting like bacteria in the soil that eats that. So think like laundry softener, you know, like laundry detergent. Because a lot of people don't know that like enzymes and like basically biology is just riddled and baked into your clothes cleaning process. Like how can you get clothes clean in cold water? Well, it's because there are literally like enzymes eating the dirt and soil. And so that's sort of the same concept. Like they're going to have things that eat that so that you can eat your potatoes on Mars. So,
The Martian is a lie.
You know, I think this is kind of a common thing in a lot of sci-fi movies. But I mean, I feel like Moonfall got it. I mean, there. Knocked it. Do you need to go get more whiskey? Did I just, you know? Yeah.
Well, if we're talking about atmospheres, I wanted to point out something that maybe wasn't like when I first learned it. It was kind of mind-blowing for me to understand it on a deeper level, but the atmosphere that a thing has, a thing being, you know, like a planet or a moon or an asteroid, which doesn't really have an atmosphere, it's determined by the thing's mass, right? So the more mass a planet has, that kind of defines, you know, what molecules are able to be held by and what molecules or atoms are able to escape. And so I won't like bore you guys with the mass of it, but it's really interesting that the moon, for example, which we don't think of as having an atmosphere per se, it still has an exosphere, a teeny tiny exosphere, like little particles are kind of like being able to be held by the moon's gravity. And so it's an important thing to look into when we talk about, you know, finding other planets with other life, you know, their atmosphere will be determined by the planet's mass. And that's something that we are looking out for with awesome space missions like Kepler and TESS, which are finding exoplanets by the way that they transit in front of their host star or the way that they pull on their host star with their mass.
Mass. And that kind of, Tom followed up on his question about, you know, testing organic gardening practices. And he said, you know, cooking a pile of compost to make organic gardening takes the right conditions, but keeps the natural cycles going, including the atmospheres, which good bacteria would need. And that's absolutely true. Yeah. And so it's again, it's biology. It's just, it's tricky. And the guy that I know who runs that lab, he told me that it has been really hard to grow plants that aren't like very fast growing types of vegetables. So lettuce grows really fast, radishes grow really fast. But once you start getting into like the peppers and the tomatoes, those are a lot trickier, he said, to get to grow in space. And it's because of the like the roots getting confused because of the lack of gravity. Mm-hmm. So they somehow need to also know with gravitational pull which way is down, and they're getting confused and it makes them grow funky. So it's just, there's a whole host of issues to get to Mars and atmospheric pressure. Let's talk scuba really quick. Atmospheric pressure is definitely a huge, huge problem because shout out again to my poor sickly boyfriend right now, Brian, but he was actually giving me a partial pressure lesson on scuba diving yesterday and talking about partial pressures and how it affects and like how your lungs and he was like, yes, I'm talking about partial pressures right now. But when that's a huge part of that exploring other planets that we have to deal with as well, because we are so finely tuned to live at this one atmosphere of pressure that even when we go diving, not even that far down. I mean, the deepest I've ever been is 90 feet. And you have to make sure you take a lot of safety precautions going back up because it is incredibly dangerous to put yourself in the position of coming up to, you know, you have that much pressure on top of you and all those molecules compress down. And then when you go up, they're going to expand out really fast. And that's how people rupture their lungs because... I'm sorry, I'm laughing right now because Kavi's like, is it just me or did your glass double in size and magically he's drinking for three?
I had a drink in here and then I had another drink in here and I'm working on this one.
And do you have a third drink to have after that?
I will have probably coffee after this.
I just saw this question too. So, sci-fi movies in space, which ones do you think get the science down most accurately? I like that.
That question was asked by Dennis Bridger, aka my sister.
Let's
answer
the movie is Iron Sky. Hands down.
Let's answer it.
Hey, Dina.
he hasn't been drinking at all.
Stanley Kubrick's movie 2001 got the science down supremely accurately. Stanley Kubrick himself refused to film unless he had a scientist on set, a NASA scientist rather, to make sure they got all the scenes of weightlessness down, to make sure they got the food correctly, to make sure they, very importantly, there's one scene where the main character had to eject from his space pod without a helmet, go through 10 meters of empty space and into an open airlock, and then shut the door and turn the air on back in time. That was done as accurately as it could possibly do it. If you watch the movie, he gets shot into that little room into the spacecraft in pure silence, and only as the oxygen is filling the room do we start hearing things again, because no sound can travel through nothing. As the atmosphere filled up in that room, the sound got louder, and it is possible to survive, I think, 20 seconds or 30 seconds with a gulp of air in space before you die horribly. So, forget the air part. Your blood's going to start boiling. It's a very not nice thing.
Right.
I think you're actually, the way Tim Robbins died. The breath.
After 2001 was made, it was scientists actually said that if you start to hyperventilate, breathe a lot really, really fast before you go into the vacuuming space, and then exhale as hard as you can, evacuate your lungs as best you can before going into empty space, you'll last longer. Your chest won't want to.
So don't forget that when you're in a spacecraft and you're like, okay, remember to Wim Hof, whatever his name is, you know, my way to that other capsule. I was going to say, like, that's not how I saw it in Star Wars with Princess Leia. She lived out there for like a hot 2 minutes. Like,
leave the space wizards out of it.
So I actually have not seen really 2001. I haven't.
That's your homework assignment for tonight.
I know. I think I'm going to have to tonight because I love Stanley Kubrick. I love several of his movies, but that's the one I know a lot of clips from it, but I don't think I've watched it.
So you didn't, you like Stanley Kubrick, a science communicator, and you didn't watch his one science movie.
Look, I just, you know, I don't need this kind of negative energy on my show that's named me, Benjamin.
Sorry, I was like, mean.
Why don't you just keep drinking that drink for me now? My friend Kara says, wow, that gives me a lot of anxiety just thinking about it. You know, I think that is something probably that really makes or breaks people if they're able to be an astronaut or not, right? Is dealing with that mental stress of like that, like you are in a simulated environment, a created environment to keep you alive in an environment that you shouldn't be alive in, akin to scuba diving, which I will be the first to admit that like I have mild panic attacks every single time I go in the water. The first time, every single time I go down, I have to mentally coach myself through it. That it's like, no, you're not going to drown. And I had actually a big meltdown this summer. One time, I don't know why. I was in already of a heightened state of stress, and it was like, whoo, I freaked out. And it, and that's the really dangerous thing. Cause I've seen like directly firsthand. I saw someone at 90 feet shoot up because she freaked out. That was bad. Yeah, she had to go get flight for life, or you know, taken to a decompression chamber. So, well, that's even worse than the bends, because the bends you can get, even going up slowly and taking like your time, you can still possibly develop the bends, but if you do it that fast, your lungs will. She was like spewing up blood.
Yeah.
Because her lungs had ruptured. Yeah. So
the first time.
Go dive.
Scuba diving. Yeah. No. Yeah. Definitely go dive. But like,
I think stick to hot tubs. Thank you.
The first time that I went scuba diving, so I was an idiot because I went with two friends who were like, oh, you know, we want to be astronauts and, you know, scuba diving is the first step towards that, apparently. And they said, you know, let's all do a scuba diving course. You know, we'll get our first and second stars in the certification process. And I was like, oh, that sounds like fun. And I get there and I realize they've both tried it before and I have not. And so I've committed to a week of diving with like zero experience. And the first time I go out underwater, I freak the hell out because I'm just not used to breathing out of my mouth. I don't know, like, I'm meant to be relying, and it's okay to rely on my, you know, breathing apparatus. And the diving instructor basically took me down to the bottom, which was at about like 8 meters down or, you know, 25, 30 feet. And he's just like, I just can still picture him motioning to me. He's like, you know, hold on to this rock and just breathe out and then breathe right in and breathe out. And that, like that first day, I was sure that I was going to hate it. I was going to have to drop out of the course. I was like, I'm just going to panic. And I was fine. Like by the second day, I was loving it. And it's now my favorite moment every time I go scuba diving and you go from relying on your own air to the breather. It's just like, and now I'm a fish. It is fine.
I'm a fishy zen.
Yeah. You have to be zen about it. You have to recognize
it. You have to figure out what works for you mentally. Yes, definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
It's something that's unique to each person and what part of your like calm down access point. So for me, I like to go down on the line. I don't like to just try to power down. I like to slowly descend. So we're going to have to end the show. I know that this seems, I know, but we can keep the live stream going for, you know, another like 10 minutes. We just have to end the recording part of it. So I know that went really fast. Thank you to all the people who tuned into this probably a little bit weird episode on iRock Space Radio, but we really do want to engage in as many ways as possible. And this was an idea that we had from the beginning, was that we were going to incorporate live streams in some shape or form. Like I said, it's probably going to evolve over time because this is what we do. But we will definitely be attempting it at least once a month and keep refining it each time. So again, you can find me as Space Case Sarah on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, all the time wasters. Fun fact, science also on all the time wasters, and science actually science, depending on which platform you are on all the time wasters. And you can go to, and yes, to all, Tom just said, thanks, you three made the afternoon a little lighter. Thank you.
Thank you.
You can go to irockspaceradio.com and sign up for a crew club. We have really cool things cooking, and
if you want, get
a t-shirt like this, get a free t-shirt. Check out our show. We have other shows too, so find out when those are airing and listen into them as well. Ashley, who does our news, she does also a show called the Top Guns or the Top Guns of Space, and she interviews people. And she I think her name was Amy, if I can remember off the top of my head, reached out to me and was like, hey, Jim, what's his last name? Jim
Johnston Smith.
No, hold on. We're running out of time.
Bridenstine.
No, Bridenstine. Not. No, I love him, but no.
Jim Carrey.
Jim Carrey.
Jim Cantrell, who is the CEO of Phantom Space. Yeah, she was like, he would love to like do some media stuff. And so I was like, Ashley's got the perfect show. So she has an interview that just dropped this week with Jim Cantrell. And he was one of the people that helped with starting SpaceX and stuff like that. So he's got a cool story. So anyway, iRock Space Radio, check everybody out on our website. And thank you again for listening. You have been listening to the Space Case Sarah Show with space nerds Kavi and Benjamin here on iRock Space Radio.